Good evening. Nice to be here with you on this evening that in France is an anniversary of the terrible terrorist attack 10 years ago. When team of terrorists went to cafe terraces and to a concert hall, the Bataclan, and gunned down people on a Friday night throughout the city, or in one part of the city, actually. And I was thinking about that today and what I was doing that night. I was sitting with the group at the Red Earth Center, where we used to sit, right by the canal. And the restaurants and the bars that were attacked were right by the canal, Saint-Martin. But when we came out of the sitting, nobody knew. It seems like maybe we didn't have smartphones or something at the time. I don't know. Or it took a while for the information to circulate or something. I don't know. And I got on the metro. And by the time I got home, then the information was my husband was watching the football match, and there had been an attack at the football match as well that night. And so then the news started coming out. And so actually, I had been riding under the city, exactly under where the attacks were taking place. Really strange feeling once you realize that. So that memory came back for me today, and it's the kind of thing where most people in Paris know where they were when they heard about this. They know what they were doing. I know my son was, young and 20 years old and out and about in the city, and we were really worried about him because nobody knew if this was going to keep going on, if there was going to be attacking bars and nightclubs throughout the city, or if it was over or what. So when we finally got in touch with him, we said, just go to someone's house and stay. Don't move, But in any case, today there's, this is the anniversary here. And this also came amid, I had been thinking, I had read a fellow Dharma teacher who's been doing this much longer than me, had said that with some friends, they asked each other, what still burns in you? What is still your burning issue, or what motivates you, or something. And so I, she had her answer, and her friends had their answer, and so I kind of took that question on too. And well, it came to me the in relation to this, terrorist attack 10 years ago, the parable in from the Lotus Sutra, where the Lotus Sutra is one of the sutras where the Buddha is telling all these different stories that are parables, kind of like in the Bible, there's parables. And there's a famous one, which is the parable of the burning house, which you may have heard before, maybe not. And the story is that there's a very wealthy man who has this big old house that is kind of falling into ruin. And he has many children, and they're all playing in the house. And they don't realize that, there's it's dirty, and there's poisonous snakes and rats and dogs and things in the house, and it's falling apart. And At one point, the man goes out of the house, and when he goes out, his neighbor calls him and he said, "Look, there's smoke coming from your windows. Your house is on fire, you know?" And so, and he thought his children were in there, you know? So he went to try to get the children to tell them to come out, and they ignored him. They were so busy with their games and their activities and having so much fun, they ignored him. They didn't even see the fire. They didn't even notice the filth and the poisonous snakes or anything, or that the house was falling apart. And so he, you know, again begged them to come out. And they just said, "Ah, no, Dad," you know, and they kept playing their games. So he thought, "What am I going to do?" And there was only one door to this house, and it was very narrow. And he thought, "Well, you know, maybe I can get a blanket and throw it over them and wrap all of them up in this blanket and carry them out." But the door was too narrow for that. And then he thought, "Well, maybe there was a long bench." He said, "Maybe I can convince them to all sit on this bench and then somehow carry this bench out the door." But that too would not, the bench would not fit through the door. And he thought, "What can I do? If they stay in here, they will burn. And if I stay in here, I will burn too." And they weren't aware of the suffering and the pain and the agony that that would be to burn in this, you know, house that was burning. And they were so absorbed in their games and play that they didn't care. So then he thought, He thought of what their favorite toys were, the children. And among their favorite toys were these special kind of carts. One cart that was pulled by deer, one cart that was pulled by goats, and another that was pulled by cows, bulls. And so he promised them, he said, "If you come out, if you all leave the house, come out, I promise you I will give you these carts. You'll find them out there." And because they really liked these toys, they liked the idea of these toys and these things that they really wanted, they went out. Except when they got out there, the carts weren't there that they had wanted. But the father, you know, some sort of magic or something, instead, he gave them each one cart that was pulled by a beautiful white ox. And in the cart, it was filled with musicians and treasures and all kinds of wonders, right? And the children were delighted and they were saved from this burning house. So in when he tells this story, the question arises, well, he lied. Did he lie to his children? Tell them that there was these things that they wanted out there. But in fact, when they got out there, that's not what was there. And so the conclusion is that, well, yes, maybe you could see it that he lied, but he saved their lives. And when they got out, they realized this wondrous thing that he had given them and saw what he had saved them from and saw what he had given them. So there's many different ways of why here looking at this parable. You know, there's a real traditional one where each of the three carts represents one of the traditional ways, one of the vehicles. There's three vehicles in Buddhist practice, and the beautiful one pulled by the white ox is the great vehicle, the Mahayana vehicle, which is the one that Zen is in actually. But, you know, if we can look at this, it's also looked at quite simply as the Buddha using skillful means. That the father is, you know, the equivalent of the Buddha, the Tathagata, who has awakened to the fact that we're living in a burning house. And I mean, we literally today are living in a burning house. Our habitat is burning, right? The planet. If we just look at it from that purely literal, you know, burning the environment, climate change, all of that. But if we look at it burning in the sense of the house, this world of ours, of samsara, of delusion, of not seeing the way things truly are. And we're so caught up in our distracted games and things, we're distracted by our games, of our activities, of our addictions, that we don't even see that the house is on fire. We see some of it. We see there's some war here and there, and that really occupies our mind. We understand there's people starving somewhere, but we don't really pay much attention to it. We're busy with our other stuff. And we forget that we're living in this burning house of delusion. So the Buddha comes along with skillful means, what we call skillful or expedient means, where depending on the situation, the people, he will offer them something, or he will attract them with something, or he will express his teaching in a way that they can understand. This is that very basic teaching that my teacher gave me of meeting people where they are. That's just a teaching of skillful means, right? So because he knows what his okay. That's interesting. We have some mysterious forces in this burning house, but I guess it started again. So because he knows what interests his students, his children, he said, I will attract them with this, I will attract them with the cart that's pulled by the deer, which in the traditional version is one of the vehicles. And or I will attract them with the one that's, pulled by goats, or the one that's pulled by, cows. According to the child and what they relate to and what they like and what appeals to them and how they can understand things. And so the Buddha's really interesting, the basically for the Buddha, in our teaching, there's only one teaching. It's Then there's a million different ways of expressing it. But it's, we can say it's awakening to the oneness, to the true nature of self and others, to the absolute reality of things as they are. That's how we formulate it in our school and our Zen teachings. Or at least that's how I formulate it in my Zen teaching. And so there's only one teaching. But as the Buddha, but the Buddha is able to, he takes that one vehicle, that one teaching, and offers it in three different ways and offers it to different people at different moments according to their abilities, their maturity, their affinities, where they are, It really sounds pretty basic, doesn't it? So last night I went to a film screening, and so it was a documentary in America about an American poet, and it was in English, but because they were showing it in France, they put subtitles in French, right? Seems obvious. Well, that's a skillful means to communicate what that message is of that film. And then after, the person who the film is about, the poet, the director, the producers came on stage, and there was a conversation, and there were microphones, skillful means, so that everyone can hear. You pass the microphone around. There was a microphone for people asking questions in the audience. Then there was a translator, both translating for the poet and the filmmaker who were, Americans. Translating into French for them. And then when they would respond, translating into English for them and translating into French for the audience when they responded in English. Skillful means. It seems really obvious, right? Well, it is in that context. We can all relate to it. But what about in this context? So, how is the Buddha, how is this parable of the burning house? So, we're living in this, this burning house, and we're very attached to it. We're very attached to how things are, and our games, and our distractions, and our addictions. And everything that preoccupies us, to the point where we don't even really see that we're attached to whatever it is we're attached to. Some things we do, everybody talks about, I am addicted to the internet or my, social media, or, oh, I drink too much, or I like sugar, or I like to gossip. We see this stuff that we're, some of the stuff, right? But the big picture of it, we don't see. We don't see that we are missing the oneness in who we truly are. And the house is burning. Like we say at the end of our talk, our practice, time swiftly passes by. Don't squander your life, It's burning. The house is burning. In the Buddha's parable, so each one of the children has to go through the door themselves. The door is too narrow. He can't carry them through, right? His job is to show them the door and convince them to go through that door, or convince them to tell them that if they go through that door, they will find these amazing things. Which is what the Buddha did for us, that set the way for, showed us the door and told us these amazing things that he had found when he went out the door through that narrow door. And then we realize it and we say, oh, yes, of course. Well, we want to help other people come out that door from the burning house because we know how wonderful it is. And there's this cart full of treasures and wonders out there, right? Now, it doesn't mean we come out once and then we stay there forever. Of course, no, we come and go regularly. And so the door is narrow, it's difficult to see, and it's difficult to pass through. Sometimes we could say, well, passing through is to, awaken to this path, to find this path. Oh, I found this path, which is not better than any other path. It's just that's the skillful means that are used in this path that appeals to us. Some other path, there's other skillful means. The path of that poet last night, well, so happens that she also had a Buddhist practice, but, her path is the path of the outrider poet, the warrior Dakini poet. And her life is devoted to that, right? That's her way. She found that door, went through it, and that's her way. And she keeps doing what she does. What burns for her, what is her burning desire, is to keep doing it to introduce it to other people. Which is what, so if I come back to the initial question of, well, what's burning for me, that's it too. It's to show the door. Tell what you can find when you go through that door. Point out that the house is burning and the delusions that are constitute that fire and the consequences of those delusions, So the literal burning of the planet is a consequence of our delusions. Of our deluded view of self and other and separation and duality and grasping and rejection and all of those things. The standard three poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance, right? And so when we decide that, okay, we will go through the door, we have to leave something behind. Right? We have to leave that burning house behind. And sometimes we don't want to. We don't want to leave behind the distractions and the games and the what we think of as fun and exciting. But when we go through the door, we realize, well, it's not all that fun and exciting what our distractions are. It's actually, and that's what they say sometimes about addiction, there's, because that's like really being stuck with our distractions, right? And not being able to let go, is that, there's very little joy in the whatever the addiction involves, and there's the sharing that is entailed in that is usually sharing with other addicts, right? And it doesn't have to be, a junkie who's shooting up. That's not, can be any of the stuff we're addicted to, our main addiction is addiction to self, to our idea of ourself. That's our primary addiction that all of us have, right? Is this clinging to an idea of myself. So we have to let go of that. And there can be some feeling of loss when we go through, when we think of going out of the burning house, to something else, we don't know what it is. And whatever we need to let go of will keep trying to keep us, right? So our attachment to self, that self we're attached to, doesn't want to let go because it knows its very existence depends on you hanging out there. If you let go, then it's gone, we can each look at, well, what's my burning house? I mean, we all participate in this global burning house of our current situation, as humanity, right now. And then all of the declinations, all of the different ways that that manifests, whether it's, computer, whether it's cars, whether it's, war, whether it's destruction of ourself and others in any amount of ways, but so what is it that we're really hanging on to here, and what do we need to leave behind in order to make that shift to go out the door? There's a lot of promises, So the Buddha's teaching, gives, the basic promise. We can call it nirvana, or we can call it awakening, illumination, whatever you, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. That's, hanging there like, this is what you get if you go out the door, right? Although, as we say in our practice, you don't really go anywhere and you don't really gain anything. Paradox, right? The house is on fire. We're telling you to go out of it. But when you do, you realize that it's the only thing we need to do is meet the situation as it is here and now. That there is no separation. There is no other world. This is it, and that's the beautiful aspect of this teaching, We devote ourselves to bringing people to the other shore, but there is no other shore. We're already here. And we can, at the same time, help others to come to the other shore. That's the paradox. And then this whole thing of what's important in this parable is the skillful means, because, anyone who has children can understand this, or, like if you've taught children or, whatever, you know, you appeal to them where they are and what something that they want, you know. And there's that story, it's I think it's like some, you know, Yiddish tale or something about a young prince, probably in Poland or somewhere in Eastern Europe, I don't know, where he suddenly has he decides that he, you know, his father wants him to grow up to be the great prince and to follow his footsteps. His father's the king or the leader or whatever it is. And the kid rebels, you know, he doesn't want to do it. So he decides that he's going to not wear clothing and he's not going to sit at the table and he's going to eat on the floor under the table. You know, this sounds really outlandish, right? And the father's just distraught and really upset. And what's he going to do? He wants his boy, his young man, to grow up and be great, a great leader and everything. So he calls in the rabbi. And the rabbi said, "Don't worry, you know, he'll be okay. I guarantee you he'll be okay." So the rabbi takes off all his clothes and sits under the table with the kid, the young guy, and joins him there, and they eat under the table. And I don't know, go around their business naked or something. But then at one point, the rabbi said, "You know, it's getting cold, winter's coming. You know, I think we should put on pants, you know." And so at first, the prince kind of, well, okay, he doesn't want to do it, but then he agrees. So they put on their pants. And then he said, "You know, I think we need shirts too, you know." And so they put on shirts. And eventually the rabbi said, "I don't want to sit on the floor anymore. Let's sit at the table. Don't you want to sit at the table? Much more comfortable." And so the guy says, "Okay." So the young guy says, "Okay." So they sit at the table. And you can see where this goes. So eventually, the prince comes back, becomes a great leader, follows in his father's footstep. The parable of the point of this parable is that, again, it's expedient, it's skillful means, right? So the rabbi meets the prince where he is. He doesn't scold him and give him orders and tell him this is what he should do and he shouldn't do. He meets him where he is. And joins him, sees him, which is, we all know that we have a much better chance of learning, or, you know, I think we were talking about this recently with Debbie, or in a study group or here, I don't know, of that, you know, we have a much better chance of possibility of learning something if it interests us, you know, if it's something we want to do. So the Buddha's skillful means of, you know, attracting his children with their favorite toys is beautiful. And it's toys that they're not distracted with already. It's something else that has meaning, you know, the toys that he's attracting them with. So like, you know, in our teaching, we wouldn't say, okay, yeah, if you do this practice and, you know, you follow the expedient means of koan practice, you will get the latest iPhone, and you will have unlimited bandwidth, and we'll throw in the new MacBook Air, or, you know, that's not what we're promising you. Or you will hit the jackpot and win Euro Millions or whatever it is. That's not what is being promised. That's not what is being offered. The riches and the treasures that are being promised are far greater than all of that. Far greater than all the iPhones you can imagine. All of the, you know, piles and piles of millions of euros you could imagine. What is being promised? What is, it's not even promised. What is being pointed to in these teachings is much more precious, a far greater treasure than all of that. But we need to find skillful means to convince people. It's not even convincing. I keep going back to the story where he's trying to convince his kids, but it's really to help people see that they don't want to live in this burning situation they're in anymore. You know, maybe they have a job that's, you know, really not healthy for them. Or, maybe they spend way too much time playing video games, or, maybe they're unhappy with their relationships with people or something. Or they're associating with people who don't appreciate who they truly are, partly because they don't know appreciate who they truly are, so they're in abusive relationships or something. And what's being promised is not psychology, it's not therapy. It's the, what we say, it's the great way. It's the awakening to the true nature of being. Far greater treasure than all the other stuff. So, part of my work is skillful means. And at the moment, I'm like, after 20 years, I'm rethinking, okay, well, what skillful means do we need? We've been using the same skill. If we've evolved because with pandemic, we can't, this skillful means came to us. And we started this whole practice of meeting online. Wonderful skillful means that arose out of the circumstances organically. And they always do, if we let go of our fixed ideas, if we can see beyond our distracting games in the burning house, we can see. We come back to Bernie Glassman's three tenets of, not knowing. So we have to let go of, leave behind all the ideas, and then we can just see what is, bear witness to what is, to what's the situation here, and then act from there. That's where skillful means come, is from acting there, from there. So the father in the parable, he has to become aware that the house is on fire. So he goes through the door and his neighbor points out to him. It's interesting that, he doesn't find it alone. Someone else points it out to him. Someone points out that the house is on fire. So then he's okay, so wow, he was not aware of it. And he goes back in the house and he has to let go of his ideas about how to save the children. Put it aside, drop it. And then he can bear witness to the situation and something else arises. The skillful means he needs to help the children come out. And I'm just giving you can probably find books about this parable. Lots of commentary and lots of different ways of looking at it, from the very traditional to, just focusing on one little aspect. So maybe I'll stop there with this parable and open up and hear what you have to say. Questions or comments, or maybe you've heard other versions or interpretations of this parable.
Maybe as hello everyone. I didn't hear the parable from the start, so I may be taking it from a different perspective. So for me, the burning house, the one that makes sense to me, what came up to me is more, there is one book from Pema Chodron that I never read. I just remember the title, which is When Things Fall Apart. For me, this burning house is this, everything is always falling apart. And for me personally, the suffering, no faz isso, Maru. For me, the suffering is trying to keep building it, or in the case of the burning house, is trying to keep to putting the fires out. And also this this burning house, or these things that are falling apart all the time, they are not necessarily bad or good. I mean, you mentioned climate change, of course, and there are other things, but in reality, I think I feel that the ones that I see closer to me, they are even neutral. They're just falling apart, and the suffering is me trying to put it back together and trying to. But again, I didn't hear the initial parable. I don't know if that was the take. And then where I feel the freedom is the embracing that things are falling apart, and being one with it. And yeah, well, that's what came up for me. Thanks.
Yeah, the parable, you probably, I don't know at what point you came in, but it's that there's this wealthy man who has a big old house that's kind of falling apart. He has lots of children, and the children are playing their games and toys and distraction. And he goes out of the house, and when he comes out, the neighbor points out to him that there's smoke coming from the windows and the house is on fire. So he wants to get his children out. But when he goes back in, they ignore him, or they tell him, "Nah, go away, Dad. We don't want to come out. We're playing with our games," and they don't even notice any of the what's falling apart or that the house is on fire. And if they stay, they will die and suffer greatly. And there will be a lot of pain and suffering that happens if they stay in the burning house.
Hi, everybody. Roshi, are you specifically asking how we can get more people to practice?
No.
Yeah. Dylan and I talked about this one time, saying, I mean, how do you advertise for Zen without it being tacky and at the same time being slightly aggressive, saying this is really good for you? We didn't come up with anything, but the slogan is we do it better.
Well, we know where that goes if we say that. We do it better. No, I'm not at all. Because, the way I interpret our vow to save all sentient beings is that means the person right in front of me. So it doesn't, it's not like, we have to have hundreds and hundreds of people that I'm saving. It's the person right here, right in front of me. It doesn't mean that it part of the skillful means is to make the teachings, make the practice available for people who are interested. It doesn't mean like, evangelical or, get out the vote or something, but it does mean, making sure that it's available if people want to come. That's so that in that sense, I maybe that's what you and Dale mean. I don't know.
Less so than say 20 years ago, but I mean, when I'm still haven't done it because I'm kind of shy about it. But in this town, in my town, the idea of silent meditation is probably not the first thing that comes to anybody's mind. I mean, I'm gonna have to explain what I'm talking about and make it non-religious. But there are just tons of. I'm so used to being in a social world where everybody's heard about what do you call it? Not Buddhist meditation, but the mindfulness training and stuff, that I forget that there, most people don't know about it, I assume. And it's a shame.
But, and so that's an example of, you know, if that's what is burning for you and you want to, you know, do that, then you have to think, okay, well, what would be the skillful means in that situation? People who don't know anything. It's like when I was volunteering at the refugee center and, you know, these people didn't know anything about anything, these guys. And they were like, you know, basically just trying to survive with what they had in their backpack, you know, and had been like traveling through Europe and across Africa or whatever, from Syria or Afghanistan for 3 years. So we just sat in a circle and I, you know, we didn't even have a language in common, right? So just signaled the breathing and we sat there for 10 minutes and then we walked for 10 minutes and then we did that again. Just doesn't have to be anything elaborate. But that's a different situation than yours where these guys were in this refugee center. They had nothing to do all day. And so if there were activities proposed, well, they went, you know, because they didn't really have anything else to do.
Well, my main problem is once the people have decided, taken the step, but how, and actually I talked to Tiago about it and I don't think either one of us said anything particularly conclusive, except that the talking about it made me realize I've got to find a public place for this is going to be allowed. So I'm going to have to make it sound allowable sort of thing in a town where there are no restaurants with alcohol because we're all Muslims or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's part of the skillful means, yeah.
Good night, everyone. Singing here in this skillful means and in this love in action or compassion in action. And sometimes, well, along the years, I developed a lot of skillful means to serve or to go to where people are. But sometimes I think, well, I'm just teach something. It's not the same thing, meditation or whatever. But I'm really in this path, though. And when I see how hard it can be sometimes, although I see the pressures of liberation at the same time, and liberation from suffering and from delusion, and sometimes I think this is sometimes so difficult that maybe I just don't say anything, you know. Just only if people really want. If not, it seems like that idea of ignoring that we are ignorance is okay. It's, I don't know, it's just a thought.
Yeah, Maizumi Roshi used to say that if you don't want this practice, you know, if you don't want to do this or you're not interested, certainly don't do it. You know, it's like the prince who, you know, doesn't want to wear clothes. It's much better for him to realize himself what he wants to do than to have his father telling him what to do. You know. So because the rabbi, you know, is with him and goes along with him and does what he does, then he accepts it. But, you know, and some people just, this is not their way, you know, that's the thing. That's why it's, you know, interesting that the Buddha, you know, he has one vehicle, one teaching, but he, you know, teaches it in many, many, many different ways. And we could even make that larger where, you know, there's so many different paths of realizing one's life, you know, and I'm just talking about the spiritual realm, you know. My experience is that a life that is not realized spiritually in some way or another is partial. But other people maybe don't feel that way. And it's certainly not me who will tell them, but that's what my experience is. I would never tell someone, you know, you're dumb, you're ignorant, you're not, you know, you're so preoccupied with the material world that you're missing half of life. But my experience is that is it. But maybe that's not theirs. I don't know.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Wait, let me see you all. Yeah, I seem to remember a story about the Buddha, or at least in the history of it, or at least in the book that I've been reading. Story of the Buddha story. Where there is this, something a bit, I mean, we've mentioned this, like a king who's a bit desperate that his son is not really living up to the expectations. And so he calls in the Buddha or something because the Buddha is traveling around there or something like that. And suddenly the kid or the teenager, suddenly he really wants to go along with the Buddha and become a bhikkhu and join him. So then the father, who thought that he was maybe finding a solution to get the Buddha to talk to the kid to get him to live up to the expectations that the father had for his son, becomes even more desperate because now the child wants to leave altogether. But then in the end, I think, if I remember correctly, that the teenager, I mean, the Buddha manages to talk to the king, to the father, and tell him that actually, if you really look at the situation, the teenager is really not ready or fit yet to take responsibility politically. And so he convinces the father to let the child come with him, and for some years he stays with the Buddha, and then whatever, I can't remember what event comes up, or maybe the father is becoming older or something. And then, so the young man at this point, who has developed his practice quite a bit, lives up to the circumstances that suddenly arise and goes back home or joins his family again. Anyway, so there's that's another version of a form of twist of that. I must share as well that what has been coming up for me is that I have just joined a list, whatever it's called, a mayoral ticket or something, or, you know, a list of in my village. So we're going to be running against another list of people who are competing, I suppose, to, I mean, I'm not going to be the mayor, but on a list with them. Bunch of people, and so I will get back to you, and as to whether this will be skillful means the first time I try to do a talking circle at the Conseil Municipal, I'll film it for you guys. We'll see how that goes, but I will definitely be keeping in mind that I don't know how much this whole project is. I mean, one way or another, it's already happening to an extent. Not that we might not win, but I'm sure it will be interesting for me to see in what way this whole thing is skillful mean for me to somehow, yeah. Or I have put myself in this situation, but we'll see how that develops. And yes, so I'm not planning on recruiting people to join us in our practice. But it'll definitely be an interesting space to use everything I've been practicing, learning, realizing through our practice, and see how that resonates in the context of local politics in the southeast of France. I'll tell you more about it in the next episode. Well, thank you.
Yeah, maybe if more, you know, politicians had a practice like ours or some deep, you know, spiritual practice, so then maybe they would behave differently. I know that the mayor of the community I live in meditates with Dana, with my teacher's Sangha. I don't think most of the constituents know that. He doesn't go around advertising it, and he initially hesitated to come to Dana because he didn't want everybody to, he didn't want to make a big thing, you know, he didn't want to distract. He also didn't want people to be like talking to him and coming up to him and things. And Geno Roshi said, don't worry, it's not going to happen here. Most people won't even know who you are. it's true. You know, people know who he is, but nobody bothers him. Nobody, they relate to him as just who he is. So. I, however, watch a lot of what he does and his statements and things, and you can sense that it's there. It's nothing blatant, but you can feel it, which is great.
May I?
Yes, please do, Krisha.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Adrien, just let me suggest, I didn't quite get half what he said, but I get the main part. You can, if your team wins, you can have a space for group meditation, just 10 minutes, 15 minutes, easy stuff. And if they like it, maybe they can join us, for example. I did that in a university here. No one joined us. But yeah, it was a nice time. I liked doing that. For the parable, I thought it was really funny when Tomáš talked about when things fall apart that I read, and I was thinking, it was something like, if you're, I think you are. We are all in a burning house, getting distracted and whatever, and we don't even want to get out. When things fall apart, would be something like the house really collapsed and we got no grounded, and we were fully attached to the burning house, which is really tough for us. I forget the skillful means. Of course, I know I have children a lot. I do know the difference when I'm very skillful and when I try to force. It's really different. And it's different for both. It's I could talk a lot about it, but I think the skillful means my attention was when I do it with myself in Zen, when I try or when I notice to get out from an attachment and how attached I am, and it doesn't really work, don't go there. And applying skillful means for myself, and the image of the little door, the narrow door, because maybe you just don't see it. It's like you can you you. You free yourself. I kind of feel that you return to the burning house because it is what it is, but you are free. You are not so distracted or so much attached and don't know. And maybe, I don't know, with my youngest, I was kind of annoyed with her using too much the phone in her free time. She cannot use it on school or wherever. And she is not a sport girl like the other one. It is, this one it isn't, which I understand. And I remember the scouts, the non-Catholic scouts, and she tried, and she from the third time I had the idea and I proposed to her, and she went camping the first time, and she was really, happy. They cannot use phone, and it's in her free time. And I think maybe we are, this is something that we are doing together. I did the idea, but I needed her to like, of course. And I don't know. I thought it was, what I just said. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. That's how it works, huh? Yep. And in order to behave, to have that kind of skillful, instead of like making her go to the sports with her sister, which isn't, that's not who she is, you let go of who you think she is. You open to what the possibilities are, and you act from there. That's beautiful, yeah. We are out of time. Thank you, everyone, for sharing and being with us.